Thank you for taking the time to speak with me today. I really appreciate it. And first of all, congratulations on becoming the new artistic associate at Black Theatre Workshop.
Thank you. Such interesting shoes to feel. It's so exciting. But yes, thank you.
I'm sure. Especially now with the way theater is working, right? Because
it's a strange reality. It's a strange it is a very strange way of walking into Black theater. I have not been in the cafe, like I have not met my colleagues face to face ever since I started last October.
Because
everything is online. So I see their faces, we meet regularly and everything, but I'm like, can you imagine by now we would have been having coffee at the cafe, like at the kitchen together at least for months, but I know. We've never met face to face.
It's going to be, I'm just thinking of that moment when everything goes back to how it was before, how fulfilling that's going to feel.
I've been warning people that I'm giving awkward hugs to everybody in 2022. They all will last at least 10 seconds. Suck it up. I'm giving hugs. And
10 seconds is the minimum.
Yeah, and we should make it a rule, just like prepare people. 2022 is very strange, awkward hugs, figure it out.
You're going to have to deal. I've been withheld. This has been out of my life for this long. You can deal with this.
Yes, I mean, and I'm sure that we can all find a consensus. It's like when people decided to shake hands now, like it's a rule. So it's like when you meet someone, you have to take their hands. Now yeah. When we meet you, you have to accept the hugs.
Yeah, more and more affection, always.
And I'm very sorry to all the introverts that are traumatized by what I'm saying. I will not hug you.
Introverts, if you're listening, we respect you and we will pay attention to your needs. Yeah,
absolutely. But the rest of y'all.
But everybody, I feel like everybody specifically in the theater industry, vulnerability is such a huge part of what we do. It's such a key trait of sharing our work. So it's really, really bizarre to think about how it's been kept away from us all this time. But when it comes back, it's going to be such a huge learning experience.
And it's weird because I had a couple of chances to still work just before we had a major shutdown again in October. But it's just whenever we would be in the room with the distanciation and the mask and everything, and we're like, okay, well, we're here. Can't touch each other. So that's also very strange, especially
so strange.
For a bunch of theater people in a studio. And you're like, okay, don't approach that space.
You can't really put theater people in a room and expect them not to want to run towards each other.
You know, and it was quite strange and problematic and dystopian and all of that.
Dystopian is the word of 2020.
Yeah, I agree.
Speaking of vulnerability in sharing your work as a theater maker, what did you learn from watching young actors perform semi-autobiographical scenes that specifically reflect your experience within the church?
It was, and I'm being careful because I was very lucky. We had like a wonderful week of workshop before the reading, which is when exactly I was able to absorb the weight of what I'm sending out into the world. And like you said, vulnerability, all of the actors shared their experience with my script, shared how they connected with the family dynamics, how they connected with the culture and how we embrace religion, how we bring those rules in the home and in the society. And to watch all of them relate and express and share, it makes me even more willing to keep on sharing my own stories, but also it shows that sometimes I don't know if I would be able to write a scene where I know that I would not want to act that scene, or I would be afraid for the healthcare and the safety of that character. It's very, should I ever have to write something that is incredibly painful, I hope that the director would know how to protect those actors from it, because we relate to the stories, we relate to the emotions, and we make the connections and we connect the dots. And sometimes I don't want to awake any trauma in anyone. So it's very, it's humbling, but it also, it reminds me of the responsibility of what I put on paper, and I'm making sure that I will never be sure that it will always be in safe hands, but to really nurture what's on the page so that whoever brings it on the stage can feel honored by it, and not, I would not want an actor to come out traumatized by my work.
No, of course. The piece contained some very heavy topics.
Mm-hmm.
And all the characters know Martha from very different areas of her life and from their lives. But aside from the obvious connection to the church, do you think there's anything that connects them all as one?
Well, that's one of the things that I found very interesting, because when I was writing the play, and my plays, anyways, the plays I write by myself, not collectively, but by myself, they're usually really based on my life. But that's what happens when you grow up in a community and that is so tight together. Like, you are born in the community, you grow up with those other kids that mm-hmm. end up being teenage friends and so on. And what you realize is that I'm never completely one character, and I'm kind of all of the characters, just like the characters are me, but they're also all of my sisters. And they're also all of the close best friends that I had growing up at the same time. So I always make a little test by sending my script to one of my sisters, just to make sure, like, that by the end, they should be confused. And like, okay, because at first I thought it was about this, and then it became about this. And it's like, yeah, I'm mixing all of our experiences into different realities, but at the same time, they need to have their own personalities. Like, Claudia cannot just be a chameleon and embody everyone that I knew. But it's just that when we are women, we have multiple essences. Like, there's no such thing as like, oh, she's very quiet. Always be careful about the girl who's always quiet, because
you have no idea what's in their head.
Exactly. And the person that you think, oh, this person is very solid, very stern. Yeah, but you don't know that person's story and so on. So it's about when you see, I usually develop my women more than my men, because I don't try to put myself in the shoes of men. But I women that I feel like this is something that I understand and that I know. I have, my mom has 6 sisters. My dad has 5 sisters. We are more female cousins than we are, that we have boys. They are the oddity at the Christmas party. female energy is something that I feed off a lot, but I also feel like it's important to show how it's never completely black or white. There's a lot of mixtures, and Claudia is complicated because she wants to, I'm sorry, I can't stop the notifications from Slack.
Oh, it's okay.
But I hope it's not ruining the sign. The sound.
No, it's all right.
But yeah, it's really about making sure that I want to represent the different aspects of being in those type of communities. So for me, Claudia, it's more a mixture of like, oh yeah, and this person and this person and this person, very much alike, but also exactly the surprises that they keep and the burdens that they have to carry, and the same for Martha. So it's really about, it's to show the color and the struggle. Everybody has that inner battle, and even if you think you've already won that battle, you're still in that process. It's never really over. It's kind of like when you realize that your mom can still change. Yes, she's still a human being. It's
yeah. Not. I mean, what do you mean my mother is a person? I didn't think of it that way.
Exactly. Like, you don't change your haircut, you don't change your wardrobe, you are mom. And it's like, she could pick up her stuff and just go to Italy if she wants to. She's a grown up. But it's that's the thing. It's we are complex.
I read that the focus of this piece was to explore the complexity of an identity. It made me think about forces that are passed down from generation to generation, but that manifest themselves differently depending on social climate or surroundings or privilege. To tie that into the connecting factor between the characters, at the ending, when Martha finally lifts her hood, what was the setup for her strength and her new beginning in a way? What brought her to that point?
That's what's really interesting about the complex characters, is that no matter how conservative we think a society is or a community is, it always depends, like, what is the lens that you're looking at them from. One thing that I like is that people often wonder, like, is this place set now, or is this place set at like in the 50s or in the 60s where things were more strict. And it's about giving those clues that these conversations are happening today, because there are so many levels of rules. Like, just as a person, and if you think about being a teenager, you are who you are as per your parents, then there's who you are as per your siblings, then there's who you are as per your best friends, the ones you walk in the street, and then in the school. And then at that age especially, you see yourself only into that world, right? Like, what do you actually see? But you're not even ready to start picturing yourself as an in society. You are a teenager and you are you belong to this market and this aspect. And that's how, like, the society sees you. But we have all these different levels of rules that we have to answer. And if you add to this a church, if you add to this a God, spirits that follow you, if you add to this all of these different layers, and then you have also your inner conversation, which is your instinct. So it's Martha, is she's the product of, would she have been different if on top of her church, the society around her was also giving her the same message? Or, and that's what I enjoyed watching, is that when you imagine that a young teenager today is still believing in God and still wants to respond to all the answers of the community, but she still goes to school with some friends that are listening to Beyonce. So it's like, how do you deal with the two? Like, I had my version of Beyonce in 1998, and I remember that just saying my name was it was tricky for me, because it was like, oh wow, she's actually like, the three of them, they were asking like position, and they wanted to be named, and they wanted to have power in their couple, which I was like, oh, that's really cool, because it's true. Like, that's, I could see how boys from the outside, because I was still inside of my community, but how boys from the outside, how they treated girls. And it was like, well, you're number one, you're number two, you're number three. And I really felt that's how it was for girls out there. And then you hear a girls band saying like, no, I want you to say my name. I want you to recognize me. You go to church every Sunday, but you still know about that. You know about that revendication, that the fact that there are girls out there who are fighting to really let themselves spread their wings. You know about it, but you're going to stay seated and you're going to do what's right. And what's right is the opposite. And that's what I think is fascinating.
The way you present yourself, it definitely depends on what your surroundings are and who you're surrounded by. Mm-hmm. And there's definitely something about growing up around all those people that follow the same tradition, the same culture, and how different it feels when you go out into the real world, for lack of a better term.
Mm-hmm. The idea of being detached from, because they're your, like, it's your community, they're your loved ones. So changing the rules, it's not a rejection, but that's what we fear of doing. And there's also like losing your compass. It's very strange. I remember sitting in church and looking at this and like having like the two voices in my head, like, rah, 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 like, wouldn't it be great if you didn't have to do this every Sunday? And at the same time, I'm like, oh my God, wouldn't it be awful to raise kids without church? Because to me, that idea would be like so empty. Like, oh my God, people live together without getting married, but it's such a beautiful ceremony. It's made me a big debt, you know? It's not that big of a deal, but when it's all you know, the idea of like exploring something else, it's incredibly scary. But I also realized I'm the baby of my family, and my sisters are much older than I am. So when I was something like 14, I did something very bad. I skipped school. It was like the last week of school. And in Chateauguay, there's a big, like, it's the woods behind the high school. So if you wanted to leave school, you had to go into the woods. And that's what people did the last week of school. You go into the woods. And if you're like, we're really bad, like people were like having beers and they would party before the end of the school year. And every now and then the principal would get in there and like get the names of everybody who missed it. And once I got caught, and I went back for my math class, and then the principal walks into the class and he's like, Mr. Dubuisson, we know, and they called your parents. And I'm like, that's it, it's the end of the world. So my parents send me to my aunt's home for the whole summer to make sure that whoever bad friend you made that summer, that just before, you're not seeing them during the whole summer. So I was sent to Long Island, New York.
Oh my gosh, I did not expect Long Island.
Yeah, no, and she made sure. She didn't send me at my aunt's house in Brooklyn. No, she sent me to the deacon's house of the church in New York City so I would only be with Christian kids.
Oh my gosh.
TV. And she picked me up on the last day of school, straight to the Greyhound bus, and I came back home the day before school started. So that was like really like where you're not seeing any of those bad kids. But then it's like, it's really intense. Like the, oh my God, I think that I lost my like my chain of thoughts. But like, it's really the idea of like how strict it was to like to break the rules and like to the way that I just like got brought to the States. And then I came back home. Where was I going with that thought? I'm so sorry. I do
not. No, it's completely fine. It was an interesting story. I have some friends who live in Long Island, and they've told me about their Catholic school upbringing, and it just sounds so, I don't know, so intense, like what you were saying.
It's really the expectations of what you're allowed to do. And I remember it was really just I just did not go to class. It's not like my grades weren't good. Like my grades are great. But it was just like, why did I want to tell you that story? Oh my God, I'm doing too many Zooms. You are the fourth Zoom today. I'm sorry.
Oh my God.
That's why my brain.
It makes total sense. I've been there.
Because you were telling me about, the fact that you also had that idea of leaving your community. I'm sorry. I forgot.
No, it's okay. I was talking about how different it felt, for lack of a better term, to witness the world outside of what I knew.
Yeah, the idea of like recreating your own. Oh yes, that's why I was telling you this. And I came back home the day before school, and when I got home I was 14, so that means that my sisters were 20, 22, and 23, and two out of my three sisters had moved out of the house while I was gone during the summer.
Oh my gosh.
And I had no real idea of like, well, you know, like I kind of understood like what was probably happening, which now I'm looking back like, okay, so that's why my parents panicked. They already had like two of my older sisters were like, no, I'm not doing what this church is wanting me to do. And they were like having their own crisis. Like one of my sisters, like she just like picked her bags and left. We had no idea where she was for a couple, I would say like a good 2-3 years of not knowing where one of my sisters was. And then the other one, she just went like, nope, I'm not doing it. I'm moving in an apartment. That's how it is. I'm not going to church anymore. So I went from like just being sent away to Long Island and coming back home, but suddenly the house was practically empty. And it was like, but what do you mean? And they basically became what we're very afraid of in sanctuary, like shun. I cannot talk to these girls anymore because we don't know what she's doing. Why did she have to leave the house? And they're all questions that you're not even allowed to ask your parents, but it's within the family. So that's another thing that I would love to explore, like the secrecy inside of a family. Like you ask a question to a parent who decide like, I'm not answering that question and you're not going to have the answer. And that's like, but it's so heavy. Why can't we just talk about this? So it's really the idea of change. And when I came home and I realized my sisters were gone, that's when I realized how much I hate change. We don't like the fact that our normal life is going to change. And then it was like looking at my sister that was left home was like, and are you going to leave also eventually? But no, we are the four sisters. We stay together. We're going to live together. And then you're like, of course not. Everybody's going to go their way eventually and everybody's going to grow up. But it's that shock was like very weird of like, we used to be six in the house and now there's only four and two of you are parents. So it's very, it's the unknown is very scary, but that also taught me that the unknown is inevitable also. So eventually with your questioning and so on, even though the fear comes in, the second that you live that first breakage with normalcy, it kind of bring everything together that, well, that's where you have to either build your courage or you have to feed your fear. because it's one of the others. Like, it's, you're either going to stay in your comfort zone or you're going to be to be brave and listen to your instinct and move forward. But it's very scary to imagine a life away from everything that you know. And then you realize that, does that mean that, like, none of them is going to love me if I leave? Will they care about me if I leave? And am I dishonoring them if I leave? Is everything that I do after echoes and bounce, like, it's that burden that we give ourselves that is really not that it's not important. But then once you take those steps, for anyone who ever had to, like, get themselves out of an environment that was too constrictive, like, when you get out, that's the only way to discover that there are other ways. But you have to do that step. You have to get out. But I understand the idea of wanting to stay in something that is already structured and already settled and has strong foundations, then of course it's very comfortable to just, like, lean in and be part of the movement.
Yeah. On that note, I was thinking what you were saying, there's this quote, I can't remember where I heard it, but it's some advice, feel the fear and do it anyway, and leap and the net will appear. Those two pieces of advice, they're terrifying even to think about, but I think, like Martha's character said, fear is good. It's a chance to explore and figure yourself out in a space that's not just the sheltered environment that you've known. It's a chance to really find things out for yourself, and that is so important to try and do at least once in your life just to say that you did.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I think that I choose a lot of my projects as per the fear that I feel. Like, if I'm afraid of something, I usually want to do it, because it's like, okay, why am I afraid of this? What's going to happen? And fear makes me grow. And I'm not saying I put myself in danger. Oh, no, not at all. I don't even like La Ronde. I'm not that type of fear person. And actually, one of my friends took me ziplining in Costa Rica, and I was like, no, that adrenaline is for real stuff. I don't like that.
I went to Acrobranche years ago, and they had to bring me down. I was terrified.
I believe you so much. But I was like, yeah, no, there's a reason why I'm supposed to handle that fear if there's fire behind me, or if there's, like, something that wants to kill me behind me, but not for fun. No, I don't like that. But when a project is presented to me and I'm like, oh, that is so scary, that's a good, to me, it means, yeah, that means go for it, conquer it. I'm usually very happy that I went for it.
Yeah, to me, I feel like depending on the level of fear and anxiety that might come with it, it's something that's calling to you. Like, nerves mean that it's something you deep down you want to explore, but you were too scared until you were presented with the opportunity to do it. And now that it's in front of you, you're not sure what to do. But that feeling to me means that you should take on the challenge.
Absolutely. And besides, I think that a life without, that's another thing that I hope Martha is exploring, and I'd like to explore it even a little bit more in French, but a life without fear is incredibly boring. How sad would that be? And not that we want to have danger and we want to be in danger, but I feel like there's a real balance in life. If you want to appreciate peace, you need to have some crap in your life also.
There has to be adventure.
Yes, because otherwise I once visited a volcano in a very, very, what I feel is a small town. And of course, when I traveled a lot in Asia, I lived in China for 2 years. And being a Black woman backpacking in 2006, 2007, like, you would get people, like, getting out of their houses so they could stare. And every now and then I'd be like, I hope your life, like, I had a stare off once with this little, she was a farmer. She was just, like, working on her land. And I was walking by because I didn't feel like paying for the bus and the pony to get to the site I wanted to visit. So I decided to walk it. And as I walked by her house, like, she just ran and she sat on her porch and she was looking at me. And I could see her, like, with her cabbage and her little vegetables around her. And I was like, I hope her life is, like, freaking exciting, but what is making her life exciting, and what are the different things that's making her life hopefully as thrilling as I was going through, like visiting Indonesia and go like, oh, I am visiting the volcano today, and here I am with my Canadian passport. And but you do have these little moments where you sit and like you look at the other and you're just like, and the same way that she was looking at me going like, who is this person who is walking by my village? And sometimes like we would just like, she offered me a cup of tea. We didn't say one word. That was just like nice. But she just like realized that, okay, she's staying there. She walked in, she gave me a cup of tea, and I had like the tea, and then I said bye, and then I left, and I was like, I hope she has like exciting stuff that happens to her every now and then. And then on my way back, I heard about like, oh yeah, so like someone got eaten by a boa a couple of weeks ago. It's like, well, there she, her life is freaking exciting also. I don't.
I guess, so your wish came true then, I guess.
But you kind of feel guilty about that, but it's like, yeah, it's, I feel like I like to know that my experiences can be shared with any level of wherever you are in society or on this planet. And that at that moment I was feeling very privileged, like walking into this village with my vacation time, and just like, I'm here to see this site and you live right next to it, but to me it's special, and I'm taking my camera. And you need those moments where you need to like just, okay, I'm in your space, I'm in your area, and I can't speak with you, but I'd love to like exchange with you. So the exchange happens a lot with your face and your eyes and the quiet laughters, and like, okay, well, we didn't say a word, I don't know who you are, but I'm leaving now, bye. That wish, that I hope your life is good also, but you know that you're passing by with all of your privileges, like, and then I'm gonna take my plane. I have no idea what I'm telling you all of this, but yeah, it's the idea that I hope everybody gets the same level of excitement in their lives. And I don't underestimate anymore people, because like, oh, she lives in a small town and she has all her vegetables around her and her life must be boring. Nope. No, not necessarily.
Not. There could be a boa that's just eating people around the corner.
And she has to chase a boa. So, yeah.
Truly, we don't know people just by looking at them or by walking by them. It takes opening up to them in whatever way that is, if it's like a silent conversation with your eyes or a 2-week vacation together. Like, there's such a range of human emotion that could be captured in the smallest moment.
Absolutely. I think it's nice when you are, especially, not that it's nice not to speak the language or anything, but when you're like really, one of the reasons why I wanted to move to China was I was actually just looking for a space where I could decolonize my brain. I didn't want to go to South America because I'm Haitian. I didn't want to go to Africa because this is not what I was looking for. I wasn't trying to reconnect with my ancestry. I just wanted a space where, even if I was the other, I was not into a European post-Atlantic, post-colonial space. I wanted to be somewhere where I had no ties. And to me, Shanghai felt like this perfect space for that. And when you don't necessarily speak the language, but you live there, you know, you, after the first 3 months, like once you realize that, okay, this is where I am, this is how it works. Because the first month, it's everything is wonderful, everything is different. And then by the second month, like, why is everything so freaking different? The third month, you're like, okay, I'm here, this is how it is. And you start to like really embrace the other culture. And especially if you want to last more than a year, like I stayed by the second year, like you really feel more into, but it's about understanding that there's no such thing as that. Oh, you're going there and over there, that's how they are. Like, how many times did I hear Chinese women are, oh, you don't know nothing about Chinese women. Okay. It's like, they're women just like the rest of us. They are as demanding as we are here. They are as willing as we are here. The energy, the love, it's all really the same. And I remember at one point I had a student, we were learning Christmas songs, because that's why I was there, you know, like to teach the Western culture. I was the drama teacher, I was a choir director, and I was also teaching them English. And I teach them this Christmas song, to save us all from Satan's power. And then one of the students raised their hand, what is a Satan, Miss Lydia? And like, oh, you don't know what a Satan is.
So, that must have been an interesting lesson.
It was, and it's interesting to realize this experience. It taught me a lot about when you are in another space, how to live with the other, how to make yourself seen also by the other. A lot of my confidence comes from Shanghai. My divaness comes a lot, like went way higher after Shanghai. But it's to understand that there's no such thing as a stereotype. There's the teachers I've met over there, the girls I worked with. I had a jazz band at one point. The people I've met at the jazz band, at the on the scene, and it's really all the same soul. Like really, that there is a real humanity that is all around. But at the same time, I recommend to anyone, if you can like get out of your comfort zone and go somewhere completely the opposite, I do not see how you can lose from that experience.
For sure. I think exploring new worlds is just so enriching. I've been lucky enough to travel a little bit, and every new place I've gone outside of Western culture, I know I'm just a temporary guest in that space, but I'm able to understand how their way of living is different from mine and how it's similar to mine. And there's something common to be found in every single one of those places.
To travel, see that too. I miss that so bad.
Oh my gosh. The day we can travel again safely, of course. I have this whole list of places I want to go. I have so much that I have planned for when this all ends and it's safe to do things again. I can't wait.
So technically, like airlines, they just need to buckle up, because as soon as we can fly, we will be there.
Oh, the industry is going to thrive.
Yeah, I don't think, we just need immunity. I will try to take a canoe if I can. To all the environmentalists, I understand. Yes, we pollute a lot with planes, but I cannot wait to leave the continent.
I can't wait to leave the city. I forget the continent.
Dream big, bigger dream. Oh, but yeah, I would take any place. I would just like, yes. We didn't know we were supposed to appreciate all of these things so much.
Oh my gosh. I'm looking back at everything I did right before this hit. I had a trip to New York planned for last January that unfortunately didn't happen. And that was before Broadway shut down, which is,
something one last time.
Yeah, but it's okay. I've had, actually, with the way theater shifted to virtual experiences, I have actually had some very impactful events happen that I don't think I would have been able to. Sorry, go ahead.
No, actually, I want to hear, like, what are these? Because we feel so like we're not sure we're doing our mandate with everything that's going on. So it's like, really, what have you seen? What have you been doing?
Well, there's this director, Michael Arden.
Yes.
Do you know him?
No, I hear names. I am a visual, so that's why I'm like, oh, I have a visual of what I've seen with that name, but tell me more.
So he directed the Broadway revival of Once on This Island, and recently there was a captured performance of his, he directed a performance of A Christmas Carol with Jefferson Mays playing each individual role.
I think that's it, yes.
And I was absolutely blown away. I had never seen a piece of theater that was captured that felt so much like being in a theater. So that was one thing. And then another event was a discussion with Michael Arden and a Q&A after. And that was so exciting and joyful. And just, it was an hour and a half of sitting and listening to someone talk about how much they love their craft. It was amazing.
Actually, yeah, it's true that...
Sorry, I think you cut out.
How long was I rambling before I got... Like, it took me such a while to realize I was gone.
No, it's okay. It was about 10, 15 seconds. It wasn't that long. You were saying...
Oh, I understand what happened. That's ridiculous. Okay.
Everything good?
Yeah. Now, independent... Oh, yeah. So, having access to different works... from our home instead. Like, I really enjoyed the fact that, like, just Stratford Festival is sharing so much of their plays online. But yeah, I really feel like an imposter working with a camera. I did not realize how much, when it comes to performing, it's about that there's something about having the audience in a room. Even there's a project that I worked on at the Siegel, underneath the lintel. We had access to fantastic resources to make sure that it would be shown online. But even then, we made sure that everybody on the team would be sitting in the audience so that the actor would not have to be like speaking really only to a camera. Like, you need your audience. And that is probably the thing. I'm still mourning that. I'm mourning walking into a theater, the sound of the crowd in the theater, sitting next to a stranger in a theater.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's...
Yeah.
I was not supposed to be doing movies. So that's why I appreciate the theater, the access. I have not spent a lot of time on it, but the Broadway app, I'm paying it just so like, I hope some of them can get that money and I should watch more of them. But every time I watch a play on Broadway.com, I'm like, oh, I miss them.
I know. It's so... Sitting in the theater and knowing you're about to experience something with a room full of strangers that you're all going to connect with in one way over the next however long, You cannot match that experience anywhere.
You know, it's a true, and in French, I realize we call it l'art vivant. It makes sense. I'm trying to see, like, we should have something similar in English because it is alive. It's something that is, it's alive for that amount of minutes and you get to witness it when you're in the audience. And if you're backstage, you know that as soon as you put your toe on the stage, it's alive.
It starts. That's when everything...
Exactly. It's weird. And also an experience that I experienced that with the reading. When you're doing a play and you're part of the production team and so on, you're backstage and somebody calls 15 minutes and then 5 minutes, and then you get to peek at through the curtains,
yeah.
You look at who's there, and then you let go. You know, you just let go. But now if you're doing a production, you can see the views and you can see how many views are going down, going up. And suddenly it's not the same thing anymore because it's not just like peeking the door at the curtain and saying, oh, there's like 65 people there. It's like, oh, we just went from 65 to 82. Oh, now we're back to 74. And it's really, it's unnerving. It's not the same thing. So it's, digital world, my friend and not my friend.
It's true. I hadn't thought about that. Just even, of course, it takes a team to work on theater events, in-person theater events and digital theater, but the realm of in-person theater work, from the person who sweeps the stage to the stage manager, everyone has such a specific role and it fits into it so well. And my favorite part about it is how we all depend on each other.
Yes.
I really miss that.
It's a privilege. And once you have it, it's something that I will never, like I did a lot of community theater. When you do community theater, the beauty of it is that you get your fingers in all of the pies and you feel awesome about it. But there's something amazing about once you get to that level where it's like, that's your specialty, you go slay and that's your specialty, you handle that. And then when we all come together, it's like, oh, that's how it came out to be genius, because everybody did and we all lean on each other. But yeah, it's a very cool ship also online. I must say it's very possible to have an amazing team and it's very possible to develop and to unpack characters and all of these things. It's just that we did not realize that, because we always knew that the digital and movies and everything, that they were taking away from the audience of theater. You know, like a lot of people see theater as a dying art, but we never, I think it's probably, I guess maybe that's another positive thing about this horrible time, is that it will make us appreciate and realize that it doesn't matter how digital and how much stuff we have available, we still love the theater. Bring on your holograms if you want, but I don't think gonna make the same thing. I think we still love the theater. We love it. We want to be together. That's what we're missing. We're missing
my boyfriend.
Yes, my boyfriend is not a theater person at all. I know I love a play when I feel like he would hate it. Absolutely. Like if he feels uncomfortable, I'm like, yes, this is what I live for, honey. It's really funny. But he misses, like he's an art of food. Like he's a foodie. I make my kids still think my food is as good as dad's food. But they know that dad's just like his food looks better on the plate than yours, mom. It just looks better. He arranges his stuff. His plates are art. But he misses the restaurant, like the walking into a restaurant, the sitting at the restaurant, the community of the restaurant, the talking to the chef. He's in that. That's his art, and that's also yeah. his community. And we're both like completely hungry for what we want. I want to be in a theater. He wants to be in a restaurant. That's not necessarily what he does, but it's that's where he finds. That's where he feels like he lives when he has that space and that community around him, and that, oh, look at this, you also decided to come on the same night, ha ha ha. Well, yeah, that's his bubble. I tag along. But it's community. There's a reason why we live in cities. People, we need the community. And that, I think this is going to make us realize that we love theater for the community.
Yeah, I think it creates empathy just being involved in that world.
Mm-hmm.
Just to circle back to Sanctuary, there's something to be said, I think, about the vulnerability of being cut off from the theatrical world and having to redefine your craft in this entirely new format, and the characters having to explore the world but not knowing if they should, and just searching for answers in anything they can find.
I hope that Tam was aware of her genius, but really it's how we use the not the reality, but how we use the circumstances, I guess. And separation, it is some sort of a circumstance. And for our actors, we actually had that moment where Tam offered that you are all in your own home. We need to create a space so that you can feel your own sanctuary, and to really try to recreate that mood for them, for their craft, and for presentation time. And it's a very different way of, it's the preparation is different. It's not the same as, because now everybody has to kind of be their own set designer and pick which corner in your home is going to be the corner for the play, which, what mood, what was the light, what's the warmth of the room. That suddenly becomes, it's on the shoulder of the actor now, and on the home where they're reading from or performing from. So it's redefining your craft, redefining suddenly your responsibilities. And yeah, and those characters at the same time, that I hope it helped Espoir and Shadia, who were playing Claudia and Martha in that same order, because for them, it was a lot to take in. It was to take in the character who's going through this very emotional, it's a questioning time. It's a crossroad. And at the same time, there are also young actresses working from, like at one point, Shadia was still in Toronto while we were working on her way back to Montreal. It's all of these little things that they're realities. So I hope it helped the actors. I hope they were able to embrace it. I feel for every performer, anyone who is a performer and who has been we're remote from our usual spaces, we've lost so much, because rehearsing online, it's not the same thing. It's really not. And it probably demands way much more from everybody on the team. I'm really happy I was on a playwright mode for that experience. Because for everybody else, as a playwright, all I got to say is like, okay, at the end of every workshop, I can take my notes. I rework my script. I send it to my director. Tamara Brown gets to do an amazing job with the actors the next day. But they all had to do it facing a screen. So it's now that you're saying that, I'm like, oh my Lord, like all of these actors, what they had to really embrace. But it's We're redefining, as you say, we're all trying to redefine what it means to be an artist. The importance also of being an artist. People like kept saying, oh, being an artist, what's the point? Like, I hope that now people get the point because they miss it. It's really important. But to redefine ourselves with these new conditions as we're taking on, like, embodying people who are also trying to redefining them, I hope they're all in a good place. Now I want to send them all a little note to say, do you need a hug? But I can't give you a hug. Virtual hugs. Virtual hugs.
Just whatever you need. You have a community that is here for you because we're all dealing with it in some capacity.
For that, I must say, and I think it's a good thing that luckily both of the young actresses that did the reading, they're from the mentorship program at Black Theater Workshop. And they're very lucky because at least every week they have two mentors who sit with them virtually, but they have that talk weekly with fellow actors, with mentors. And that I hope that so many more actors would have access to that, because a circle of artists that listens to you and that encourages you and that that shares with you also, so we can grow and so on. That's important. I'm lucky because I get to work. But for artists, for actors, one of the reasons why we're still developing and we're still working on scripts and we want to give opportunities to actors is to make sure that they at least keep that contact, keep their craft afloat, because it's been a year. It's almost going, it's going to
it's
be
been a year. Almost a year.
Yeah. I was busy and I was thinking that, 2010 is going to be my year. Well, in a way, it still was, but I did not think it was going to like shut down. Like everything just, my last show was February 21st.
Oh my gosh. That's like so close to not the deadline. I don't want to call it that, but.
We were so lucky. We had no idea, but yeah, I did Afro Dragon February 21st. And then I had a Cal committee thing. So I was on a jury the first week of March. And I know that was my last duty, moment of duty, because I didn't want to shake anyone's hand. And everyone was like, what are you talking about? I was like, you know, there's this thing going around.
You were ahead of your time.
I was. I'm a news junkie. And like you said, like your New York thing, I'm like, I'm not going to tell my story, but I was supposed to fly to Cuba March 16.
Oh my God. March 16?
Yeah. March 16. And I was like, no, please just let me go to Cuba, because I did not have vacation for the longest time. Like my last vacation was in 2012.
Oh my gosh.
I was busy last year, and I was like, okay, I finished this show, and then I finished this show, and then I do the jury for Cal, and then I'm flying away.
Like, I have all this work, and after that, I deserve a vacation, and the world said no.
Exactly. That's exactly what happened to me. I was even leaving, like, I told my partner, I'm like, you are coming home on the 6th, on the 15th, and I'm packing my bags, and you're staying alone with the boys, and I'm going by myself. And then the world was like, oh, you think you're going to be by yourself for a week by the beach? No. And he locked us all in, or the whole family in the house.
Oh, my God.
So we did not know, but in a way, isn't that the best way to appreciate, I guess, everything that we've had and to hope to do it better when we come back? I was saying this to someone else yesterday, I think, or maybe a few days before, but there are things that I've learned during the confinement that I don't want to forget. I don't want to forget about spending time with my kids. Just understand that these are the faces you're seeing for the whole week. I don't change. And just spend time with them. And that as a mom, it felt great, because I have always been running. I had my kids as I was studying, as I was juggling a job and studying. So my kids are used to me always being busy. And that felt good to like have everything stopped.
Yeah, some advantages to having everything be shuttered.
Yeah, because in a way it's like there's nothing to be done but staying safe. and to see how things go. And then the morning came, and the deaths and the families came, and the conversation of end of like, okay, who do I have the energy for? And to be realistic with these decisions and saying, I love you. I don't feel like partying. See you in a couple of, I didn't know by the at that time, I guess it would be like in a couple of years maybe. But yeah, the idea of like having to create your own sanctuary, to create your own haven and figure out, okay, should this last? How are we us in our little cell, our home, our family? And that's something that I guess I am grateful for that. I'm grateful that I built a cardboard house in my basement, and that we planted our first real garden with the kids planting their seeds in advance in April. And so it's not all bad. I think it forced us to finally take care of the stuff. We're like, oh, one day I'm going to have time to do that. Well, there you are.
Here you go. Here's your time.
Exactly. So if you wanted to meditate and you didn't meditate during confinement, just scratch it off your list. You're never going to do it.
Okay. Yeah, I think it's something really wonderful to be able to take away, to learn what you really care about, to put your relationships first, to put yourself first.
That was a first. It was a very nice way of ending what you just said, but it really was, because it forced me. Me, I'm not going to say everybody, I don't know about everybody else, but for me, it really forced me to, and I have, I told you, I'm a news junkie. Mm-hmm. I kind of saw it coming a little bit too much in advance. I told you, I lived 2 years in China. And when I saw, I almost lived in Wuhan. When I was looking for a job, I almost went for college in Wuhan. And then I picked Shanghai because Shanghai. And So I'm aware that, like, when people think Wuhan market, I know they imagine like a market on the street and people having little cabins. Like, it's not that type of market. Wuhan is a mall. That's what they mean by market. It's a mall. And it's, when I saw that they had to shut down Wuhan, knowing how the Chinese community works and the discipline that they have, I went and bought my books for my kids because I knew I was going to have to teach at home. I understood. I worked 10 years also at the McGill Health Center. I did 2 years in immunology, allergy department, typing all types of terms and words that I was like, what did they say? Did they say pandemic? Did they say N95? When I heard N95, I was like, no, we're locking ourselves in. No. Because I was at the finance department for a couple of years. And in 2015, I was assisting the clinician, the director of the buying department. And we were having the Ebola crisis at the time. And we had meetings every Monday with the Minister of Health to convince them that we need to make sure that we have N95s and N99s in every hospital in case Ebola shows up. So that's right. Why when I heard N95, I was like, no.
You're like, something is happening.
This is not a dream.
No.
It was, yeah, it was quite an adventure, but that's why as soon as they announced shutting down, I'm like, this is real. This is going to take a while. We're not going to have a vaccine in a couple of weeks. So I called a couple of projects that I had, and I'm like, I have two kids at home full time. I'm now a teacher. I am now an educator. I still have to like cook now 3 meals per day. My partner works in Abitibi. Usually I force him to come home, but still we're still parents 24/7. And that's a whole different dynamic. And it was, to me, it was logical that if you don't stop everything and focus on your family for this, what do you do it for? And that was the right decision until the kids got out of the house, actually, they were allowed to go back to daycare, until they were allowed to go back to summer camp. And that happened in June. So from March to June, we stayed home. I took the time to stay home. My grandmother died on Easter morning. I took my time to mourn. I took my time to like really talk to my cousins in the States. Like, we had a lot of Zooms, but they were family Zooms. They were funerals online, and they were like, oh, did you hear about this person who died? Oh crap. And it's when they say it's very
it's spread out in the community, Black communities, people are suffering a lot. I really felt that blow just by when it hit New York City, because as a Haitian person, I have a lot of family in Queens. I have a lot of family in Miami. And those cities were hit very hardly. And unfortunately, for some reason, Black people over 70 do not tolerate COVID very well. So at one point, we had like 4 funerals in 1 week. So yeah, if I hadn't taken the time to like just stop everything and just feel that type of emotion going by, I think right now I would be sick, because in May, I had energy for nothing. I didn't have the energy for nothing. If you were not my son, I couldn't. It was my boys, my spouse, and making sure that we are getting by and that we stay healthy. And I would see people like, oh, I'm so bored. Let's make parties online. I'm like, huh, good for you. But no, I really did not feel the need to be anything that anyone else expected or needed from me, that I took the confinement to confine myself. And it was the right thing to do. It was the right thing to do for me.
Of course. This is a heavy topic all on its own.
Mm-hmm.
I want to ask you, what do you hope audiences will take away from this event and from the experiences that they find within the characters matched with events in their own lives?
I hope they remember how there's no such thing as the right and the wrong answer. There's no such thing as a clear black or white. It's very often in the gray. I hope they take away that community is important, and that no matter what the decision, it's never going to be easy. It's really, Sanctuary is a play I wrote originally. I always write for me. I always knew I was going to write this play. I wanted to write it because I feel like when we go to the theater, when we go to the movies, we don't see those stories necessarily. And when we go to the theater, we even see less of those stories about girls, about women, about young women facing the pressure. And I know, I figured that if we are not that many female playwrights writing our stories, if we're not that many female playwrights of color writing our stories, if we're not many female playwrights of color who come from very conservative communities writing our stories, it's really important to share that picture with the audience and to let the audience relate to these girls. That right now, if I tell anyone, oh, this girl, she goes to church 3 times a week, she's not allowed to speak to boys, she wears only skirts, and she's just, suddenly we're going to alienate this girl as, oh, very strange in Quebec. Oh my God. Like, but these girls are everywhere. They're all around, and we relate to them. We can relate to Martha, just like we can relate to Sister Anita or to Claudia. They're not aliens, they are here, they're among us, and those stories need to be explored. So if there's something for the audience to take away, is to watch it so you can see the humanity and you can connect with these girls. And also to Kevin, I never talk about poor Kevin. I wanted to give him a voice, because when I take Kevin out of the story, it becomes really like a anti-boy play, and I didn't want that. I really wanted to show that it's not easier for them either, because it's an assumption that they trust, and then they have to live with the consequences of all these assumptions of being a man, and they're going to be the man of the family, and they don't know what they're doing either. Like, we're all kids, and we're all kids trying to play adults, and you play adults by trusting the other instead of trusting your instinct. And sometimes, I guess, sometimes following your instinct is not the right thing to do. But sometimes it is. And that's what I wanted to explore. And that's what I hope that people like have at least some questioning or some sympathy, empathy, and to feel like from you reach out to those you think are too different. There's no such thing.
You can find something in common with pretty much anybody if you get to talking to them long enough.
Yes. sometimes the conversation can be long, but if you keep talking and you keep the conversation open, like eventually there's a consensus. I feel like yes, because wouldn't it be sad to just always tell the same stories, thinking that, and eventually people are all going to be the same. Well, no, we need to tell all these stories. And I feel like religious girls are not talked about at all. And when we are talked about, it's really like from a lens of like, and how to get her out. But I didn't want to have that lens. I wanted to show like, what if you want to stay? What if you don't want to leave? What if you're not sure that that's what you want, but you just know that that's not what you want either? It's more about that questioning that I find interesting. And wouldn't it be nice if we all had that conversations, more of what ifs instead of you should.
More of what if instead of just why not?
You know,
it's about exploring.
Yeah. And I also like the fact that there's feminism in all kinds of circles. So people often think like, oh, in that society, it's very patriarchal. Believe me, there's a feminist in there somewhere who's questioning stuff and who's asking questions and who's trying to make her own way. There's always that. And the question is like, do they have the opportunity to express that side of themselves? That's why I think it's very interesting that Martha seeks refuge in the sanctuary, where she decides that she's going to be herself and she's going to be exactly who she is, and all of these impulses inside of her, they're going to come out inside of the sanctuary. She's not going to hide that from God. And to me, that's important. It's important that we explore the fact that if you give them the freedom, you could discover a whole aspect of the person.
Absolutely. This was incredibly enlightening and thought-provoking. And I really, really appreciate you taking the time to speak with me.
I appreciate your attention and your interest. It's really, it warms my heart that Sanctuary is being seen and talked about. Really, I really appreciate it.
I think it's a wonderful piece. I think it should be shared and people should be interpreting it however it makes sense for them.
I hope so too. And it's still in development. Of course, I have to, I'm doing a transfer to the French universe. It's not a translation. It's really a transfer to the French universe to see what happens to the characters, how the script changes, to develop it even a little bit more. And then I'll go back to the English script, because I really hope to eventually do a production of this play when we're allowed.
When theater eventually opens back up.
And by then it will be like fully ready for production. So why not? Absolutely.
Use your time that you have now to keep working on yourself. I think that's a message everyone could be taking to heart.
I hope they hear you. I hope we all hear you. And yeah, reflect on ourselves, find the best of ourselves so we can be ready when we're going out there, when we're allowed to go out again, we can be the best version of ourselves.
I hope so. Yeah.
By saying it, I just sent the wish out to the universe. So.
Oh, manifest it. For exactly. Sure. Well, thank you again so much for speaking with me. I really, really enjoyed this conversation, and I hope to see more of your work.
Thank you. And I'll be listening in.
Have a good day.
Have a good one. Bye.
Bye.